Welcome to the Share Life podcast with Jason Scott Montoya, where we explore stories and systems to live better and work smarter.
Welcome to another Inspirational People interview on the Share Life podcast. Today I'm speaking with Julie Christine Hubbard, also known as Julie Kitsuli. Julie, say hello.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me on, Jason.
Yeah, of course. Julie and I went to the Art Institute of Atlanta. I graduated in 2008 and she graduated in 2009, but we had classes together, although I don't exactly remember which ones. That time was a blur.
It was.
So if you remember, let me know. But we both got a degree, our bachelor's degree in media, arts, and animation. But unlike me, Julie retained her animation skill sets and is a wonderful freelance artist and designer today. So she does a lot of wonderful work, and she'll be able to tell us more about that. So anyways, Julie, tell us about you and your story.
Sure thing. Well, as you know, graduated in 2009, media arts and animation. One of the big reasons why I actually chose animation was because it has something to offer for everyone that has a big creative interest in all those creative endeavors. World building, writing, character designs, illustration, voice acting, all of that fun stuff. So since my graduation, I've been working under my artist name, Kitsuli, with a variety of clients in a bunch of different ways. Everything from maybe social media marketing to helping out at their events, creating their flyers, animated commercials. And my work has been everything from maybe an OC character commission to a full-length animated feature film. So right now I am working on, we've got a few projects that I'm working on. One of them is a cartoon series, and ultimately I do want to create my own live action / animated movie. So I've got some big creative dreams and I'm very excited.
Yeah, cool. So let's rewind to your origin story. Where did the artistic animation begin? When did the spider bite you?
Oh, well, and the other day whenever I was feeding my tarantula some crickets, actually I didn't get bitten, but I will say that I would say it happens definitely very early on. I always loved watching animated movies. My favorite movies, I think my first one I saw, my big one I saw was The Little Mermaid.
Let's chat about that for a second, because the new little live action Little Mermaid's coming out. So how do you feel about that?
Live action remakes have been kind of hit or miss, you know. I was excited for The Lion King. It was terrible. I wasn't as excited for Aladdin, but I loved that one. So
yeah, low expectation, whatever happens.
Yeah, I'm just like, whatever happens at this point, you know. So in addition to just always watching animated cartoons, whether it was like everything from David the Gnome, if anybody remembers that, or Fantasia, of course, all of that fun stuff. But also I was always putting on like a skit or voice acting, or I would love to draw comics. And, you know, of course, you know, a couple of people said, if you thought about doing animation as I got older, maybe when I was like 11, 12 years old. And that's when I started thinking about it. Really thinking about it, and I said, you know, that's not a bad idea, because it does have all of these things I'm interested in. I don't want to just be an illustrator, you know, while that's amazing, but I also want to do some other stuff too. I also want to write, like maybe I want to write a script. Script writing is so much fun. Maybe I want to write comedy beats or write a whole story. I love world building, but then I could, maybe the other day I'm like, oh, time to do a character design. Maybe it's time to do an animated background.
So what was it about animation versus just storytelling, live action, you know, in, or even other forms like novels or comics or whatever?
I was very fascinated with how it moved. Like somebody was drawing all of those characters, and it wasn't just an actor. It was several people that came together to create that. And you could create anything with animation, which I thought I was just in awe of. Like you could create a big monster, or you could create any kind of character. You can draw this. So like whatever you imagined in your brain, you could draw it out and make it come to life. I thought that was just super cool.
Well, and would you say, I think, 'cause this is one of the areas of animation that appealed to me, was with live action, you kind of have to orchestrate a lot of different pieces. But with animation, there, we have a little bit more control to sort of create the story as an independent creator. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you do. You do. You have more. You can decide, and you can decide on the style too. And you could do that with live action, of course, too. But with animation, like there's, you can decide, do I want it to be something very simple, or do I want it to be something very cartoony?
Yeah.
Do I want it to be something super realistic, mm-hmm. or do I want it to be like painted, like Love and Vincent or something?
Yeah, there's
like
a
that.
New Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle animated movie coming out,
I saw
and the
that.
Style is really. It's very unique and it's compelling. I like the style a lot.
I like that. Yeah. And I just always loved, and you know, again, it's just like comes back to, I just like watching cartoons. It's kind of like people who like doing game making, which I also would have a big interest in is creating a video game, but people who love game making love playing video games. So it's like a big thing. Like you like love doing what you're doing, you know?
Yeah. So what do you have a favorite Pixar movie? I'll throw mine out. My favorite Pixar movie is Monsters University.
I like Inside Out a lot. That one was really fun. And of course, Finding Nemo. That's always a good one.
There you go.
There was something special about Inside Out just because I was like, oh, it's like, you know, inside your brain and everything. And it's just like, I think there's just so much potential there. So much fun.
Yeah. So tell me, now you just, when we got our degrees, we kind of learned kind of the fundamentals of art and drawing and figure drawing. And we also learned 2D animation as well as 3D animation. Now you've sort of taken, kind of preferred the 2D, hand-drawn type of animation, although correct me if I'm wrong. Is that right? And why did you kind of choose that pathway over 3D?
3D was very difficult. Like I liked the modeling part, like modeling, like just a character or something, but after that whenever it gets to the texture and the rigging, I just got frustrated, and I liked the illustrative style of the 2D animation. I do love a good 3D animation, but I like watching it. And I do love whenever people can take a 2D character and develop it into 3D. I always thought that's really cool. But as far as doing it, doing the sculpt, like I like the sculpting part, but sometimes my characters look all wonky and stuff. I just need more practice, but you know, it wasn't as fun to me to do, especially when it came to the texturing and the rigging and stuff. That wasn't as appealing. Whereas I wanted to sit down and paint and, you know, draw backgrounds and draw these characters and draw them in several different things.
Yeah. So tell us, you know, how do you end up at the Art Institute from sort of that moment of, hey, I could be an animator?
Just researching different schools, and then the Art Institute just happened to be pretty close by because I was living.
So did you grow up in the Atlanta area?
No, I did not. I actually came from Daytona Beach, Florida, but we moved up here when I was 15. So that was around that time where I was looking for schools around this area because I did want to stay nearby because a lot of my family was out here and my mom was out here. But I was looking around at different places. The Art Institute was right up there. Super cool. And that's what made me decide to go for it.
Okay. Now tell us, update me and the world on your journey since then. Like since you graduated, obviously, we diverted paths because I didn't stick with the animation. I did kind of for a little bit, but eventually got away from it. And you kind of stuck with it. So tell us about some of that journey or some of the highlights of that journey.
Sure. Some big highlights. Yeah. Well, a lot of the things that I did, I started off with doing animated animated segments for clients. Like one was called Stop Tad, which was stop texting and driving, just this little stick figure, stop texting and driving. I went on to do some promo videos for a couple of clients where I was actually doing a mix of live action and animation. Like maybe I took their animated character and animated it. One was for a 5K race called the Red Hair Chase, where I animated their logo, Bunny Rabbit, running. And then I did some film editing of the map and people running and edited the audio with it. So it was like a little fun promo to get people to come to the race and get them excited for it. I did work a little bit on a couple of animated series overseas. One was Turtle Tato, which was pretty cute. I did that for a little bit. But my big animated thing that I was worked on was with one of my friends overseas. He came to me and he said, you know, we'd actually worked together on a series, like a one episode series called Muse, the animated series. And we met because we're both Muse fans. So I had actually, I was actually following his videos on YouTube. And one day I said, "Hey, have you ever thought about doing a Muse animation?" And he said, "Yes, actually." And we became actually really good friends after that. So cool. Me and him worked on Muse, the animated series, where he took audio clips from Muse interviews and came up with a story and all this fun stuff. And I animated it. So that's on YouTube, Muse, the animated series. That was really fun. Okay. From there, a few years later, he came to me and said, "I wrote a script for a movie about Christmas and aliens. Would you want to work on this?" And I said, "Sure." And in fact, I even got Nathan Dyerson from the Art Institute. He also worked on it. He did some background designs. But yeah, we worked together and created a full-length feature film. And that took a lot of work. It took about a year and a half, but it was very simple animation too. Very simple, because, you know, a full-length feature coming out in a year and a half. Yeah, it was like very, very simple, but we wanted to get that story out. So that's what we did. I was doing a lot of the character designs. I did a cameo as one of the elves. It was actually an adult, like elf at a Santa thing, and then the kid finds out Santa's not real, or at least he thinks he's not real. He gets upset, all kinds of stuff. But yeah, that was really fun, because then I had the opportunity and to go out to London. Well, it was actually in Lincolnshire, but to go out there to do a premiere of the movie, and that was really cool, because we got to he showed it at this at this really nice theater out there. We had a bunch of people. He sent out a limo for us. We felt like A-listers. Yeah. You know, it was cool to see a cardboard cutout of my characters right there, and we took some pictures with it.
That's awesome.
And then we watched the movie and just looking around, and I'm watching all these people get excited for it. So
that's cool.
That was really fun. And yeah, that's what also me and my partner, now we've been anticipating and wanting to create. I've been wanting to create my own series, but we've also been wanting to create a live-action animated movie, because one of my other favorite movies is Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Mm. So I wanted to do something like that, but we're also horror movie fans, so can you imagine a live-action animated horror film?
Yeah, so that would be an interesting challenge to overcome, for sure.
That's going to be like our magnum opus is what we kept saying, because we want to do a lot of stuff. We're talking like stop motion and puppetry and all that kind of fun stuff. So that's one of our big goals, because we're both big filmmakers and film lovers, and that's what we want to do.
Yeah, that's cool. So you were an aspiring creative person. You end up going to school, and then you end up in the real world, and you're doing all these projects. What are some of the lessons you learned, you know, just the sort of the aspirational dream versus the reality of the work itself? What are some of those lessons?
Well, for one, I thought, you know, and I think everybody thought that, oh boy, I just graduated. I'm going to get an $100,000 a year job working at a studio, and life is going to be great. And, you know, it just turned out to be very different, because, you know, you're applying to jobs, you might get a rejection letter and that sort of thing. It became very tough. It's very tough. It's very competitive. You got to have your portfolio. You've got people critiquing your work, which is great. But also you've got mean people online, which isn't as great. I've seen some mean comments about my stuff, and I just let it roll off. But, you know, because at first it does hurt your feelings. But then after that, I was like, you know what, just – if you're going to become well known as an animator, as a person, you're going to have to take the good with the bad.
I was going to ask, well, that's an interesting thing to talk about, because I think a lot of people who are critical of, you know, movies or animation or whatever it is, but things that of which they are not a creator, they're just a audience member. So is there anything about that dynamic that, okay, once you become a creator, all of a sudden that type of criticism that perhaps you even did yourself, all of a sudden you see it through new eyes? Is that?
Yeah, I do sometimes, because I will look at maybe a movie, and I'll, you know, we'll critique it and we'll say, okay, well, you know, maybe the lighting was off, or maybe something was off, or the story, because you're still going to be a critic, because you're still the audience. So you're going to critique it on whether you liked it or not. And our big thing is, we love good and not good movies. The thing is, it has to be entertaining. It could be like on the low budget of a dollar, but it has to be entertaining. And we've turned movies off just because they were boring. So yeah. As long as it's entertaining and fun and it keeps our interest, we'll keep watching. You know, even yeah. if it's not critically, like even if it's not, you know, something super awesome. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be worthwhile. And if it's not, then move on.
Yeah, but it is interesting to see it from another side.
Yeah. Any other lessons that you learned worth noting?
Definitely persistence. Like just keeping persistent. I've noticed because sometimes you'll land that job or you'll land that client like after 50 rejections or something. You know, maybe you get 50 rejections or you keep reaching out to people saying, "Hey, you want to do this?" or "Hey, you want to do this?" or pitching an idea or whatever. The key is just to keep persistent because you never know which is going to be the one. And I know any actor or anybody in Hollywood would say the same thing. Like I've seen some interviews where they've said, "I was about to quit, but I didn't. And then I landed that role that I needed and that was it." So
I think I heard John Krasinski from The Office. He was about to give up right like a few months before he got that. And now it's changed his whole life.
That's how Sean William Scott did the same thing. I remember reading an interview where he was out in Hollywood and he just kept going at it and going at it. And finally he was like, "I'm not getting anything. I'm about to quit." But he's like, "No, what if I kept going and the right role came along?" And that's when the role of Stifler from American Pie came in. Mm. And then he started doing movies. So you just never know.
Yeah, the guy in Mad Men, the main guy, I can't remember his name now. But he's such a distinct looking person that Mad Men was like made for him, but he had to wait till Mad Men was going to be created for him to become an actor. So.
So you just never know. So that's definitely a big lesson. It's just I've learned to definitely keep persisting, and you know that's how I've landed a couple of jobs where I was applying for like months and months and months, about to get, you know, like, what am I doing, and then I'll get something. You know.
Yeah. So let's talk about living better and working smarter. But let's talk about this. The living better side of it. What does that mean to you to live better? How do you apply that in your life?
I think that means just really doing what you want to do for your quality of life. Making sure you take care of your mental health and you're not working yourself to death. Like so many people do that as well. They stress themselves so much, but your mental health and your physical health is such an important part of you that if you're not taking care of yourself, you can't do that other work. So it is important to just, you know, being mindful of your own body. And then I know both of us getting older, we're kind of realizing that as well. I'm like, "Oh, maybe I shouldn't do that." Yeah. You know, maybe I shouldn't do that so much for my health.
Is that something that you've always had instilled in you, or is that something you learned?
I would say it's something I learned, because especially in my younger days, you're like, you're practically like, "Oh, whatever, I'm invincible. I can, I can drink and do it." And then later when you get older, you're like, "Okay."
Yeah.
So it's definitely learned. And the same thing with like, you know, something like exercising, maybe when you're younger, you're like, "I'm fine." And then when you're old, it just gets harder whenever you're older, you know?
So yeah.
It's definitely taking care of yourself, drinking lots of water. And then, you know, same thing whenever there's more doctor's visits too, you can realize that as well. Like, "Oh, I'm not immortal. What is this?"
Yeah. Yeah. I've been having issues with my neck. I have a couple discs that I herniated. And so, I'm going through some treatment now to help deal with that. But yeah, it's like a big old speed bump in life. You know, it slowed me down.
Yeah. But yeah, living better is definitely, and it is like just, like I said, the quality of life, like what's going to make you happy? Like what kind of life do you want? It's going to, like my garden makes me happy. My animals make me happy, you know, things like that.
And are those things that you neglected or didn't do when you were younger that you've since, or have you just
whenever I was younger, I didn't have as many animals. I only have my cat, but definitely the garden, because I didn't have a house, so I didn't really have a garden. So and then whenever I did, like I would have like a little thing that sometimes I would kind of like forget about, like, oops. But definitely now that I'm older, I am more aware and taking care of them. Now I'm taking care of all my little critters, and they're all doing really well. In case nobody knows, I got 3 dogs, 3 cats, a leopard gecko, and 6 tarantulas for now.
Wow. So there's more more coming?
Now, there could be. There possibly could
now,
be.
Tell us about how these tarantulas came about. Did you start there, or did you...
That's a fun one. So I was always, I was always interested in, I was just always like spiders. I never thought that they were scary. I thought they were kind of cute. And one day, and I actually still want to do this, so I made a podcast pilot. I wanted to do it for a kids show called What's So Scary. And the idea is that it would be about things that aren't so scary, that seem scary, but maybe they're not so scary if you learn about it. So, like, maybe heights or snakes, common fears, you know, that, like, why are people afraid of them? Why are some people not afraid of them? And how can we learn more about them to maybe not seem so scary? Because once you, lot of the fear comes from the unknown. So if you know more about it, then it's not so scary. So my first episode was going to be about spiders, and I interviewed a lady. I was in a tarantula group because I've always been... I was researching. I researched for like a year or so before I got one, but I was researching. This lady had 37 tarantulas, and that's about an average number for a tarantula keeper. Some of these people have like 50 more because they all have their own little enclosures. But yeah, I interviewed her for the podcast. It was really fun. I made a pilot episode for it. And after that, after learning that from her, I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get my first tarantula. And I did. I got a curly hair. And of course, because I'm so unique, I named her Charlotte. So, and then from there, you know, I would go to like a reptile expo and see them, and you know, I'd be like, "Ooh, a little baby," and I would get one. Yeah. And I had like enough room on my desk, so now I've got 6 of them, and they're
all. They all have their own container or their own aquarium.
Yep, they all have their own little enclosure. A couple of them start off as babies, and it's so cool just to see them molt and get bigger and bigger. And they're very.
Can they not live together in the same tank, or no?
Nah, they probably like fight or kill each other or something.
Yeah,
but and they're very low maintenance. They just need water, and you feed them however often they need to be fed, which is usually like, you know, could be a couple times a week, and that's it. And it's usually crickets. And I've only held 2 of them, and one of them was because he was very, very, very docile. He was a pink toe, but he's very sweet. He was an old man. He sadly passed on Christmas Eve. So I think he had to go help Santa, you know.
So what kind of personality, or what kind of, like, do they know who you are, or are they pretty
They wouldn't know who I am. They're mostly, like, they do have their own personalities, which is really funny. Like, I have one who's just so angry at the world. Anytime I try to reach in to change her water, she smacks it, or she dumps water in it. She's just she's just an angry little girl. I have some that are just, like, just hide. What they'll do is they'll kick little leg hairs off. Like, they'll kick their legs and kick urticating hairs off to get away. And then if you're really bugging them, they'll raise their arms at you. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to back off. Danielle, she's the angry one. She's the one who's done that. Only one who's done that, really, because she's angry. It was really funny. But, they all got the – it's pretty cute to just see all the unique personalities. They're like little – 8-legged cats, kind of. They just want to clean themselves and be left alone, and they're very, they're like a weeping angel, which is kind of funny. If anybody's seen Doctor Who, they move whenever you're not looking. So you look, they'll be in one place, and then, you know, you do something else, you'll turn around, and then they're somewhere else. And you're like, how did you get there?
Yeah, that's funny. So anything else on the Live Better before we move to Work Smarter?
No, I think that's it. Just living better, just doing what you want.
Okay, so what does it mean to work smarter? You gave some examples, like not killing yourself on your job.
definitely. Just take a step back and take a deep breath and decide, like, you don't have to do everything. That's one thing I've realized at one of my jobs. You don't have to dive in and do everything. So many people just say, well, I can do that, I can do that, I can do that, I can do that. No, just take a step back and learn to realize that you don't have to do everything. And you can actually delegate. Like, maybe if you're working on a team, work with your team members to what other jobs that they can take on. like, or realize, yeah, delegation is a big thing I've realized, because I used to think, oh, if I'm working hard, then I'm getting stuff done. But then I realized, oh, I don't think my team members are appreciating that I'm taking on something.
So if someone's struggling with delegation or not delegating, what would you tell them, like, as a way to do that, or as a step to move towards it?
I would just let them know that it is okay to delegate, because I think part of why I was afraid to was just because I was like, oh, I don't know, then I'm going to feel like I'm bossing them around or something. But a lot of people do want to help. And then I would say just taking that step forward and just being more assertive and confident and knowing what you can handle and what you just cannot, like, and learning how to say no. And just knowing, like, okay, I can't possibly take on everything, and they'll appreciate that you're looking to them and saying, hey, would you mind taking a look at this or doing this? A lot of people are usually more than happy to, because it gives them a sense of accomplishment. They want to help you out, etc.
Yeah. So how do you go about, kind of as a connection to the delegation? How do you go about setting and enforcing boundaries in your life or in your work?
I would say you just think about what you want and, like, how you want your lifestyle to be. Like, if you know that you don't want to work after 6 p.m. or if you know that you have a certain time you don't want to work or answer somebody, you can say no. And remember, no is a complete sentence. You don't have to give a reason. You can just say no. I think a lot of people want to come up with an excuse or a reason, like, no, well, blah, blah, blah. No, you don't have to give excuses. You can just say no, or sorry, I can't, or something like that. And then just realizing that if you always say yes, then it's just going to keep happening and you'll end up resenting and kind of being like, well, I keep saying yes. And then it just causes resentment and passive aggression. So it's better to just know what you want and stick to them too. So then that way people know, oh, I'm not going to bug them or keep bugging them for an answer, you know?
Now, a lot of people, I think, would struggle to even clarify, I don't know what I want. So what would you encourage someone of, like, coming up with, figuring out what they desire and what their vision is? Do you have any tips or advice on that?
That is a good question. Like, yeah, well, how do you know what you want? Yeah, I guess it's just kind of like, you can even just maybe journal or write it out. Like, what do I envision my lifestyle to be? You know, like, what would make me happiest? Or what's your, like, sometimes thinking outside the box as big as you can and then bringing it back in will sometimes help. Whenever you just kind of sit down, like, all right, here's my ideal lifestyle. Okay, how can I work toward that? And then raising your standards to meet your lifestyle. Like, don't lower your standards to meet your lifestyle. Like, think of your lifestyle and then raise your standards up to that.
Yeah. So what would you say to someone that feels and maybe this is one of the reasons they might struggle to clarify the vision, is when you set that ideal, in a way it acts as, it kind of, it reveals that you're not there, so you can feel judged. You could almost be feeling like, I haven't met the standard, I'm not good enough. And might prevent someone from sort of actually building that life. What would you say to that?
Or I'd say, well, who says you're not good enough? Like, who said you're not good enough? Who cares what they think? What do you think? And then if they say, well, I think I'm not good enough. Well, then if they think, well, I'm not good enough, well, let's bring your confidence up. What are you good at? And then that's when I would probably talk about their accomplishments or what they have done, or different ways, maybe think of different ways that they have set those standards and those accomplishments to make them feel good. But my big thing is, don't care about what other people think, because, like, who are they to judge? Because it's your life, not theirs, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that kind of hits on the topic of mentoring. And so having someone to maybe speak that into your life, how has mentoring played a role in your life?
I'm trying to think.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be a formal mentorship, but, you know, someone that's giving you advice or guiding you or teaching you.
Yeah, it's definitely helped where I could ask, where you feel comfortable, where I could ask questions or You know, I've had mentors who have helped me without even realizing, like, you're my official mentor, but I will look to them and I'll look to them and I just imagine what kind of person I want to be. And I'll look to them and I'll say, okay, this is who I, you know, this is the type of person I want to be. And I actually said that to my previous manager. I said things like, I want to be just like you when I grow up. And she's like, oh, you. But I'll look to her, you know, I've looked to her or somebody like that. And I'd say, okay, what are they doing? Okay, they, and that's where I've learned a lot of the boundary setting. That's, she's also taught me about the delegation. You know, what can I, like, it's just like kind of looking at somebody and saying, okay, I want to be like them and I want to ask them questions. I have friends who I see also as a mentor because I'm like, why, I want to be like them, you know, or like, what do I admire in them? So I don't necessarily want to be them, but you know, what do I admire in them and how can I apply that to my own life? And yeah. I have had mentors where they have helped me like doing podcast producing or something. And that was more of an official one where I could ask questions and it's very exciting and it's a learning experience. And whenever you are in a mentorship, definitely ask a lot of questions because I love answering questions.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, it kind of ties into, I guess, what you were saying earlier about, like having that vision. A mentor, like you mentioned, hey, you are who I want to be when I grow up. It can actually help people to figure out what it is they want. What's the ideal they're moving towards? That type of, hey, these are things I see in you or that value or that appeal to me or that attract me. And that's the type of value or virtue that I want to move towards. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And then it feels good whenever, if you have somebody say that to you too, then you're like, well, where they're like, oh, I admire this in you. Or I've had a couple people say, I wish I was more like you in X, Y, and Z. And I'm just like, oh, so then I feel like a motivational speaker and I'm just like,
yeah.
or like, I feel a mix of, yeah, but also, oh, you.
So on the flip side, how do you think about like helping the next generation forward? I mean, and it, you know, it was, so we graduated 14, 15 years ago and, you know, a lot of time. So
I was about to say, it was like, has it been that long? It doesn't feel like that long. Man.
So there's a whole like two or three generations that are following our footsteps. So what do you think about in terms of helping them, move up, in terms of whether it's personally or vocationally or whatever area it might be?
I think it's exciting. I haven't mentioned this on here. I'm not sure if you knew, but I've done teaching before, like it, as a tutor and as an instructor. You probably know about my, working on the weekends, doing kids parties, doing face painting and stuff, entertaining them, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But there is something special about teaching them too. And they learn and absorb so much. I mean, you don't even have to be an official teacher to teach them. You could be in passing. Like I know I've must've taught a kid something, even at a party where I'll say something and just seeing their eyes light up and they're like, ooh. But, you know, teaching, as a tutor, I've taught kids like animation or stop motion animation, game maker at a summer camp, super fun stuff. But, it's just exciting because you teach them something and they're like, ooh, and they're getting really excited. And then you're sitting there and there's like this sense of pride. And then there's like, wow, that little kid right over there could be the next whoever, Steven Spielberg, or they could be the next such and such. And I helped spark that. I mean, kids remember stuff like, what was it? It was Charles Schultz, I believe. And I think it was his kindergarten teacher or someone of his teacher. And basically she said, one day, Charles, you're going to be a great artist. Like I know that quote somewhere. And apparently that stuck with him so hard. So,
Yeah. People like that. And I have an aunt that did that. Like one of these days you're going to be on the Oscar stage, you know, with all the creative products you do.
It feels good. And you're just like,
So, but the way you talk about it, you approach that with fun and gaming. So how does fun, play, games play a role in both your life and your work?
Oh gosh, I am all about fun. Like you've seen my online presence, whatever. It's very positive. It's very friendly. It's very smiley. It's very I just think it's fun. Like, I think there's so much negativity and blahness in the world, like, where we could, I want to spread that cheer and happiness, and there's just something fun and special about, like, and it could be anything during the day. I could go out and order a cup of coffee. Excuse me. I don't do it like that. But I go out and order a cup of coffee, and then I'll hear the other person laugh, or I make them laugh, or even a phone call, and I'll just say something goofy. I'm just like, yeah, whatever, you know, we're just living our lives here. And I just think it's fun. Like, yeah. I used to have one of those bumper stickers back in the day. What did it say? It said, don't take life too seriously. Nobody gets out alive anyway. And, you know, it's just like, just have fun with it. But I think it creates a ripple, but then it also just spreads that joy and cheer, because how much more fun is it whenever you're sitting and you're working, you're in a good mood versus you're in a bad mood? Like, you can tell the good mood spreads and everybody feels good. And, you know, a bad mood can spread as well. It's like a ripple effect. So,
yeah.
And then just having that fun, it just makes things more fun and interesting. It doesn't even feel like work. It feels like play. So,
yeah. I like that. So, talking about fun, what are some real or fictional stories, narratives that have shaped you as a person?
Oh, let's see. Well, here's a few. Well, let's see. There's a lot, actually. Whenever you mentioned this, and then you we had talked about like who are some inspirational people, or in like maybe some of their stories. One of my favorite actors is Vincent Price. And a few years ago, I had the honor of meeting his daughter, which was very nice. And she told such wonderful stories about him. He just fascinated me because he was like a Renaissance man, but he was just so in love with art and the world. Like, she was talking about how they would go to the beach and just look at rocks, nothing else, just looking at rocks. And it was just so in the moment and just enjoying, he enjoyed every second of life. Like it was just something so delicious. And I think that definitely inspired me, because I was like, I want to be like that. I want to every moment of every day, just like, it's just something. And I think so many of us, myself included, just kind of forget that. We get lost in work or whatever, and bills and whatnot, but we forget to go outside and look at that blue sky. Or we're always looking to the next thing. Our brains are always like in the future, but then I'll look at my dog's play and I'm like, they're not thinking about the future. They're just living in the moment. So that was a big story that I wanted to be like that as well. Like, okay. Like, just living life and everything. And then, you know, there's a lot of, I would say there's a lot of movies that are my favorites, and a lot of those just, they inspire me in a way where I would say the story itself is great, but also I would think that the story behind the films are what really inspire me, because I'm like, how did they make that? That's so crazy. And my two favorite movies are, like I said, Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Little Shop of Horrors. Those are my two favorites because of how much went into it. Like, I remember seeing the making of for Little Shop, and I was just so blown away how they did the slow motion, how they did all that puppetry, how they did everything. And I was like, what?
Yeah. So, I feel similar with, I got a spark when I watched the behind the scenes of how Steven Spielberg made Saving Private Ryan and his story, and how that kind of led him to make, you know, just his own journey of making movies as a kid and stuff. So
that's so cool. Yeah. So, I love seeing behind the scenes stuff. Those are very inspiring because you're like, wow, that's so cool. So, and then, or just reading stories about different creatives who have had like their ups and downs, but they kept going and created something amazing, you know?
Yeah. And it sounds like the world building is a big part of it for you.
Oh yeah. I love building a world. Like, I have one of the cartoons I was working on. I could sit there and I'll just come up with characters and I'll just improv it. It started off with, one of them would start off with a doodle and then a voice acting thing. And then from there, I'm just like, oh, and she has a brother. Oh, wait, they have a parent. Oh, wait. And then like, I'm just thinking of all of these different things, all these different stories that play in. I guess something like Friends is another thing, you know. Who hasn't watched that series? But it's just like, oh, all these different characters. Oh, wait, it's not just these main characters. It's this whole web of everybody's got a backstory. You know, everybody's got a story to tell. So I think that's fun and fascinating.
Yeah. I recently saw the movie Cocaine Bear. Have you seen it?
No, but I did. I have. So, I wanted to see that in Meth Alligator. I think it was Meth Gator.
Oh, well, it was actually surprisingly good, and it kind of plays with its own absurdity. But that's one of the things they do in the movie is they kind of develop these sophisticated backstories of all the characters that are about to die. So it's pretty interesting.
I love that.
And it just kind of creates an investment that's interesting and makes this absurd story actually kind of be kind of interesting. So,
oh, that's going to be fun. I love character-driven tales, like any kind of character-driven tale. Like if I don't care about the characters, then why do I care? Like the Final Destination series, I loved because all of those characters, they weren't just random people who died. Like, They were actually had some interesting backstories, and each one I had a favorite character. Or another good example is the Generation 4 My Little Pony, which I grew up in the 80s watching those. You know, so I was like, oh, I like ponies, but it's okay. But then I saw the new series, and then people loved it so much because they had characters and they had backstories. And not only that, but they had some edge to them. They weren't just, oh, tee-hee-hee. They were like, they argued and got mad at each other and stuff. So character, I think one of our teachers actually said that it was like character creates story and story creates conflict. I forgot his exact words, but he said something like that. That character
drives. I would share that with you. Character depth is a really important value for me in the movies that I like.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, that's something very important. So any movie or show that I want to work on, I want to develop those characters, make sure they got an interesting backstory, different, you know, just different personalities and things that are unique about them, not just the, you know, the simple archetype. You want them to have like, oh, they got like a scar, or they got like some crazy story and something. And that's what makes a lot of the new shows really fun, is you got these characters and you see their personality, but then they go through a whole character arc, or like Zuko, or they have really intense backstory that you had no clue, and you're like, that explains a lot.
So that's cool. So let's shift gears from narrative and stories to systems. When you think about systems, how do you use them in your work, in your life? What is systems to you?
Well, I try to have like a routines are always good. I have my animals, so they actually help because animals get into routine. So if you got a routine, they're getting used to it and things like that. So I try to
have to get up to feed them and stuff. So it kind of gets you going. Is that kind of what you mean?
Exactly. So like I have a morning routine, you know, let them out, feed them, you know, and then I'll get ready. And then I make sure to play with them. Before
now, how do your roommates, when you let the tarantulas out, what do they think about that?
Well, I don't like tarantulas out. So my partner loves the tarantulas, but, you know, tarantulas just try to keep themselves. So we don't let them out. And our other roommate just wants nothing to do with them. I'm like, look at the tarantula. He's like, So everybody else, we got the cats and the dogs. Dogs, we let them out. Cats, we got a fenced area, even though they're bad kitties. But And I would say systems, a system, just whatever works for you. Because some people, and myself included, I work in different ways. I like to write things down because it helps me remember. But also a lot of times I like to keep it digital. Like a calendar is digital. Everything is digital. But there are a lot of times where I do want to sit and write in a planner. Of course, then that means I got like five different planners. So I found that digital has actually helped me because then I got it on my phone. I got everything, but I think a good mix has helped me out a lot. And then, I guess like having a good routine, a good morning routine to start the day off right, and a good night routine to wrap the day up always helps.
So now you're a person of ideas and you got a lot of aspirations and ideas. So how do you organize those? Is that in a notepad or a digital place? Or?
It's definitely a digital place because there would be way too many to put on a notepad. I'd probably have like,
5,000.
I do have like for certain ones that I'm actively working on, like one of my cartoon series, I'll have a separate sketchbook for that. I'm like, all right, nothing goes in here but that. Or like, if I want to start developing more surreal stuff, so I do a lot of surreal art too. So I'm like, all right, sketchbook for that. So doing that helps organize me. But then, as far as all my ideas, I've done there's the Getting Things Done. That's a book. I forgot the author name, but like that's a system that some people use. In fact, I use Todoist and I read their blog on different ways on how to stay organized, but. A big thing is you have an inbox dump. Anything that's on your brain, you dump it in the inbox. Just dump it all, everything. Yeah. Take out the garbage. Do this. Your ideas, whatever. You know, create this. Da, da, da. So you got everything out of your brain here, and then from there, then you can organize them. All right, these go into these projects. This goes into this project, and then it's prioritizing from there. It's all right, which ones do I want to work on? Which ones can wait until next year or later this year? Things like that. So that's a big thing that I've done. And I love a good organization program. Last year I found out about Notion, which is like a website / it uses tables and charts. That one I loved.
Yeah.
And that one I've started using as like my Bible, where I'm like, okay, here's my routines and here's my pets and here's like my whole life that I want to organize and put in here. And then,
cool.
It's really fun.
Yeah. I do something similar. I use Evernote, but it's,
I use Evernote too. Evernote's more for like my quick captures. Yeah. Evernote's a great one too.
Okay.
I'm a nut for a good organization program. I used to spend hours just like, I'll just look them up. I'm like, all right, ooh, that one looks good. Ooh, that one. Like I've tried Trello, Asana, they're just fun to play with. Even if I don't actively use them, they're just fun to play with and learn. So,
yeah. So how do you, with so many things going on, how do you keep yourself focused?
I don't know. I'm like, I don't know.
Or keep yourself from getting caught into distractions when maybe the time isn't right to be distracted.
I do, it goes back to that scheduling. Even as a freelancer, you gotta have your schedule. So it's like, all right, you have your morning routine. All right, from 10 to 12, I'm work focused. All right, 12 o'clock, time to take the dogs out for playtime. And 1 o'clock, it's time to do X, Y, and Z. So whenever you have that routine and that schedule, you know you have to work. Like, even if you're freelancing, you know, this is my work time. And just making sure I have a schedule, because sometimes things do change, like maybe, you know, you might have an appointment or whatever else. But then whenever it comes time to stay focused, like if I want to draw, want to write or animate, actually, funnily enough, one of the things that I do and I still do is I'll put on a movie that I've seen a dozen times and I'll put it on as background. And that's like my music / background. And that's also a fun way that I time stuff. So I can say, well, this piece took me 2 movies. To make like 3 hours, or it took me 2. I know I watched Indiana Jones and, you know, whatever else during this time frame. So that's a fun way to time it out for me.
Okay. Yeah. And that's funny.
Yeah. And then like, I get distracted easily. So, sometimes, and music will help too. And I sometimes have different things going on. Like there's a movie going on, but I'll listen to music. Putting headphones on, but I'll look at the animation, sometimes muted or something.
Yeah.
So, cool. Yeah.
But, well, what part? Yeah. Were you about to say something?
I forgot already.
Oh, okay. Is there anything? I hijacked it. Is there anything else you want to share that you didn't get a chance to? Any parting words of wisdom for us?
Gosh, I would say just, I actually retweeted this today, but some words I always say. I asked my favorite band a long time ago, how do you make yourselves better when you're feeling down? Because sometimes it happens. And they actually replied, realize you cannot control everything. Enjoy the chaos. So that's a good thing to, because you can't control everything. So sometimes you just got to enjoy it as it comes. You just got, things will happen. Yeah, you can work on things, but just also realize that it's not all in your control. And sometimes you just gotta be like, well, okay. But just, yeah. I would say that, and well, I already said that, the determination thing, just keep at it. Just keep going and do what you want to do. That's the big thing. Do what makes you happy and be weird and crazy and don't care what other people think.
Yeah, cool. Well, thank you for sharing. What are you up to? How can people connect with you? How can they learn more about your art? How can they learn about the projects? Give us the rundown.
Sure. So what am I up to? No good. actually, so what I'm up to now, I'm pretty much doing my freelance work. I'm been looking around for, you know, something to bring in some steady income, but I'm actually doing my freelance work. I'm also working on opening up a shop. I've always wanted to open up my own art shop, like stickers and prints and all kinds of other things that I create.
Like a digital shop or a brick and mortar shop?
Brick and mortar shop. Yeah. I want to start selling at expos and conventions, local markets.
Yeah.
It's something that I've kicked around for several years, and I just haven't like really had the time, or I've been like, but now it's just something I really want to do. So keep a lookout for that. I was going to call it Kitsuli's Little Shop, as you know, got my name and a little reference.
Kitsuli's Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes. So yeah, like, just like, oh, it's my Kitsuli's Little Shop. So I'm working on that. I'm working on launching that later this year. I don't have a set time for that, but I'm working on that. I'm also wanting to work on one of my cartoon series that I've been coming up with. I got a couple of voice actor friends, and you know, we've been writing stories. Me and my partner have been writing some stories called New York Tales. So that's kind of like a friends in the city, but with animals. So, you know, that's always fun. It's going to be super fun. And the way you can keep up with me is just following me online anywhere at Kitsuli, KITSULIE. You can find me on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Twitch, all that fun stuff. I'm mostly active on Twitter. And then my website is kitsuli.com. And I'm also going to be doing my blog again. So yeah, keep an eye out for all that fun shenanigans that I've
Now you've mentioned some stuff along the way, like the Tarantula podcast pilot. Are all those linked on your website?
Yes, everything is linked on my website. In fact, if you go to kitsuli.com, if you go to links, I'll take you to my link tree, and it's got everything from my SoundCloud to my Twitch to anywhere that you want to find me, you will find me. And I've got lots of big ideas and exciting projects along the way, so it's just a matter of which ones do I want to do first, but they're all going to come to fruition. So I'm very, very excited.
Okay.
So I hope you'll connect and say hi, everybody. I'm really excited.
All right. Now, if someone is interested in hiring you for your freelancing services, like, who would be a good fit to go, hey, I should probably email or call Julie and ask about this project or that thing?
Gosh, that's a good question. Well, I'm getting into voice acting as well. But yeah, if you want to contact me, let's say you're working on a game or an animation and you want a voice, I can do a voice for you. If you're looking for something more like graphic design or illustration, come talk to me about that as well. And just email me, kitsuli@gmail.com.
What kind of graphic design?
I mostly do. Sorry, go ahead. I've done some cartoon caricatures and flyers. A lot of my work is very cartoon work. So very, very cartoon.
Okay.
I've done a couple flyers, but mostly I'm more into like the caricature designs. If you want to get like a cartoon of you or your pet. That's always fun. I have one logo I did called, it's like Banjo's Treats, and it had the dog and the cat doing like this, and they're looking cool. So if you want like a something cartoony and fun for your business, just come say hi. All
right. Well, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing your life with us today.
And thank you for having me on. This has been a pleasure. I had a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Share Life. For additional stories and systems to live better and work smarter, visit jasonscottmontoya.com. That's jasonscottmontoya.com. We look forward to having you listen in on the next episode of Share Life.
All Are you a freelancer struggling to get clients and sustain an income? Check out Jason Montoya's book, Path of the Freelancer, where he provides the blueprint for mastering freelancing and sustaining a business of one. Start generating a six-figure freelancing income. Get Path of the Freelancer, an actionable guide to flourishing in freelancing on Amazon today.